All right, here we are, our first episode, our first podcast, our pilot episode, if you will. My name is Tim English.
And I'm Lonita Cook.
My trusty companion and sidekick.
That's right, family neighborhood film critic.
Well, we want to welcome you. This should be a fun little journey, and
hopefully.
I think we're going to have some growing pains probably as we go through, but I think everybody's going to enjoy the trip with us, so.
Absolutely.
We are, I guess, you know, the basic introduction for us, so you know something about us, is we are both film critics for Examiner.com, and we are both film critics for the morning show here in Kansas City, Kansas City Live.
On KSHB TV 41.
So you should be watching that show
every day.
Monday through Friday.
That's right.
10 a.m. on KSHB, or you can go to kclive.tv.
Fantastic.
And Lonita and I usually alternate Fridays, so you can catch us reviewing films every Friday. That's the best place to catch us.
And today, during our podcast, we are at the Alamo Draft House in Kansas City downtown. We'd like to say thank you to Ryan for welcoming us into this beautiful venue.
Yeah, absolutely. I love this place. It's easily the best theater in Kansas City, and it was even voted the number one theater in Kansas City last year by Pitch Weekly.
Oh, was it now? I didn't know that. It should be.
But I think it needs more attention because I think people get scared by the Alamo. I think they think it's downtown, it's expensive, it's, you know, too classy. But this place is awesome.
It's just classy enough.
It's just classy enough. I mean, it's got a bar on site. You can drink in the movie. You know, you can order food while you're watching the movie.
Order food while you're watching. That's my favorite part. They have delicious burgers, fries. They have different kinds of fries. Like, you can get like Parmesan and mayo fries or something. Great menu.
It's amazing. They got the badass beer, which
they got
something different. You know, every time you come in, you can get a good beer. So it's an awesome place, and they have all kinds of fun things like quote-alongs and just different.
The interruptions. So they have comedians sitting down in the front, and they're interrupting the movies with like little tidbits, little jokes and stuff like that. I mean, they have a lot of programming that I think will appeal to a wide array of
audiences.
That's
right. So if you haven't been to the Alamo Draft House, you need to get down here. It's at 14th and Main in the Power and Light District.
That's right.
It's a beautiful theater, and you will have a blast.
Agreed.
So here's the deal. We have a lot to talk about today.
Yes, we do. So what's this show about, Tim?
What is this show about today? Well, I think the cool thing about our show is it's going to be a little bit different each time, but mainly what you're going to get is you're going to get movie reviews.
Movie reviews. Talking about festivals.
Yeah, we'll talk about film festivals, local and national, worldwide. We will occasionally maybe have a guest with us.
Hopefully.
Maybe a guest critic to kind of sit in with us. Maybe we'll have an interview from a local or a national celebrity.
Yeah, we're bringing people in.
We'll do all kinds of fun things. We'll talk about, you know, just different things. I don't think we want to focus just on movies, but the world of entertainment. Anything that entertains, from music to art, to
iconic
TV.
Characters, yeah. Actors, singers who have become our favorite icons. And then we'll also discuss hard topics like the one we're going to discuss later on today, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Tragic news, for the entertainment industry, to be sure.
It's a loss.
It's crazy. It's sad. And for so many reasons, which we'll get into later. When we begin
in our segment called The Big Debate.
Yeah. So.
And later on after that, we'll be talking about my favorite movie archetype. The princess.
The Disney prince, or the princess. We'll call it the princess.
The princess. Although it seems like Disney has a lock.
They've cornered that market. You know, they've got a monopoly going on.
It's almost synonymous, right?
So, we'll talk about that. And there's a lot of reasons we'll get into that. But, you know, I think the one thing about our show, and maybe about us that people should know, is that we're children of the 80s.
Yes, we are.
So we grew up appreciating when movies were really badass.
They were totally badass.
Movies in the 70s and 80s were completely different from they are now, and all those movies you see now all came, you know.
And in a future podcast, in a future recording, we will do a big debate on reimaginings, revisionings, because we're talking about the movies that we grew up with, and now they're resurfacing with new actors, new technology, but should they be?
That's right. And most of them should not be. I think it's very rare that a movie should be remade.
But save it. We have a topic for the big debate for this episode. So let's stay on track.
And So I think that's enough about us for now.
Would it be okay if we discussed our top five princess movies? Would that be okay if we did that?
You want to do that now?
I mean, we don't have to do it now. I'm just saying at some point in the show.
Absolutely, we will. I know I got my five. You know,
I've got my five.
I've got a daughter. I was raised by my mom and grew up with sisters. So, I said it again. It's right in there. The princess movies are something that, you know, or just movies involving princesses. Something that I've been around a lot.
Me too. You know. I mean, I am a girl. I grew up, I think, during Disney's formative years. I mean, Disney has definitely come a long way. I mean, they dominate. You know, with ESPN
everything
and
right
everything,
now.
You know,
everything
but there was
right
a time
now.
Where, you know, not everybody could afford to have the Disney Channel in their home.
Right.
And I mean, it was just, one of those things. It was a luxury. And so seeing those princess movies was like, oh my goodness. And having a Disney princess costume, you know?
Yeah.
But since then we've had some other princess movies that have wowed us as audiences.
They've evolved, you know, and they kind of go into other different directions rather than those typical princess damsel in distress type movies that we're all familiar with.
That's right.
So we'll get into that a little bit later, but you know, maybe we should just discuss, you know, what is our thing? That's movie reviews.
Talk
about the movies just came out, and maybe we should mark for the occasion the date today, which is February 3rd.
Is it February 3rd, already? Oh, my goodness.
So,
this year is going by quickly.
We're going to talk about the movies that came out last weekend, and I think, you know, we're going to have this up hopefully by Tuesday. So,
okay. Okay. Sounds good. I mean, and then we can talk about some local stuff that's going on, too. I want to give some love to our local film artists.
Absolutely.
But what's out in the theaters right now?
Right now... the big releases this weekend were...
I saw that awkward...
Labor Day.
Yeah, Labor Day.
That
and I
awkward
saw
moment.
That, did you see that awkward moment?
No. And I don't think I will ever see it.
And you wouldn't be missing anything. I reviewed that film on Kansas City Live. And, you know, the time that we have to talk about on the show is small. About 3 minutes we get to say how we feel about a couple movies. So I'm going to say that awkward moment. Zac Efron looked totally hot. I love Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan. I know him from Parenthood. And so, and Fruitvale Station, of course, is where
he was really good in that.
Absolutely. But this film, I don't think utilizes the best of those talents. The script is meant to be, you know, kind of a masculine perspective on love, and it's supposed to be witty. And I think it kind of misses the mark. So if you don't see it, I don't think you'll be missing anything.
And that's a lot what I've heard is, you know, that's pretty common. It just isn't as funny as it seems to think it is. But I think it's also one thing is it's introducing this genre, the bromantic comedy.
The bromantic comedy, absolutely.
And
I think just about every film critic across the country either thought it or put it into print.
Yeah, and I think one reason these movies, you know, they don't really work is, A, guys don't want to see movies like that.
Guys,
you know, and I would say, unless it's done really well. I mean, and so
it has to be done very well.
Half-ass it. You know, like this movie just puts in somebody like Zac Efron.
Well, the thing about that is Tom Gormican, I think he's pretty new to writing and directing. I mean, he's been in the industry for a while, but he's worked behind the scenes as a Hollywood assistant. And, you know, he was lucky. He brought Zac Efron on as a producer. And so they got lucky with the guys that they cast. And then they kind of went with these little-known actresses, Imogen Poots and Mackenzie
like
Davis, who is amazing, actually. She's amazing in the film. And Miles Teller and her relationship, the most fleshed out, the most intriguing. And so they do really well. Miles Teller, we know him from the Spectacular Now. I just saw him in Whiplash at Sundance.
Okay.
And he is just a real force, I think.
In Tom Gormican, this is his first movie?
Yes.
if I'm understanding that correctly. And he actually looks like, I'm looking at his IMDb page right now. Very official here.
Look at you, tech savvy.
Right? Yes. And he has a co-producer credit on movie 43. Did you see that one?
I did not see.
You don't see it.
Don't see it. Okay.
No, it's off.
Uh-oh, Tom Gormican. We actually love you and we're rooting for you.
Yeah. But my point was this first movie, and a lot of times, you know, directors get stuck with, you know, something like this. Hey, make this movie and then you can go on and make whatever movie you want to. You know,
exactly.
We'll see what you can do with this and then decide if you want to make the movies you want to make later on. So
exactly. I mean, I would like to see the original script because, you know, once you write the script, you're alone in the room, you write that script, and then it starts getting into hands and you have to think about marketing and you have to think about casting and you have and it really takes a life of its own and it's reformed. And by the time it hits the big screen, it's a whole different animal than the one that you created in that room alone. So I think, you know, I don't want to be too harsh about it, but
I think for a movie like this, the one thing you worry about is the studio involvement. And
exactly.
That's almost for any movie, but especially a movie like this, you know, where they're going to force the ending they want their audience to see. They're going to put it through test screenings and say, well, audience A didn't like this character, maybe, you know, and so who knows, you know,
yeah,
especially it's, you know, because it's his first movie, no matter how, you know, invested he is in his heart into the script, you know.
That's
right. Movie execs don't care.
They
so they're going to come in and be like, "Oh, well, we understand this is your baby, but
we understand movie execs to be businessmen and not artists."
Right.
You know, which is good. You got to have business with the art. So,
yeah, maybe a little bit too much these days.
But you did see Labor Day.
I did see Labor Day. I was so lucky to see Labor Day. Let me tell you.
Ooh,
let's talk
note
about
the sarcasm.
Labor Day. Labor Day is the new movie from writer and director
Jason Reitman.
I almost said Ivan Reitman. Jason Reitman. Little Reitman. This one's starring Kate Winslet, one of my all-time favorite actresses.
Oh, is that right? I didn't realize that.
She's so great in everything she does. And, she, you know, and I'll say she's good in this movie.
I agree.
But we'll talk about this movie.
The performances were a shining point.
Wow, yeah. Josh Brolin also co-stars and
still looking good.
Yeah, I guess, you know, if you want to go that route. I'm not going to comment on.
comment? Well, I will comment.
I mean, he's a good-looking guy.
He is a good-looking guy.
Obviously, that's not why I tend to see in this movie. And then little Gatlin Griffith is...
Plays a son who grows up to be...
Spider-Man.
That's right.
Tobey Maguire. Spider-Man. Clark Gregg's in this movie. J.K. Simmons, James Vanderbeek, Dawson.
When I saw James Vanderbeek, I said, oh, my goodness, is that... It is. He looks good. He looks kind of stalkerish, but good.
So, you know, it has a great cast. Now, this movie, in case you don't know much about it, it's... Kate Winslet plays a divorced mother.
Yes.
She's depressed and kind of reclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her son kind of live a very private life. And they are shopping one day, and they are approached by an escaped convict who needs a place to kind of lay low.
Lay low.
While the law is out looking for him.
I would lay low if I escaped.
And this begins the incredibly bizarre story of Labor Day, which I think bizarre
is... That is the perfect word.
The best word to describe
bizarre.
It.
And it's one of my favorite words.
It's a good word. Yeah, so so this one, you know, I thought it was really weird, and we've talked a lot already about the weird...
Dynamic.
Yeah, the dynamic and the sexual tension throughout this movie, where you have a woman who it's obviously been a while, at least in the movie,
right.
As we understand, it's been a while since she's been
had
with
some,
a man,
yes.
Had a man in her life
yes.
for anything, and you can see there's clearly a lot that needs to be done around her home. But then you have a 13-year-old boy living with her.
That's right.
Who is starting to explore his sexual
yes,
feelings.
Identity, and that's right.
And all the only woman he has in his life
is his mother.
His sex-deprived
that's
mother.
Right. Sex-deprived mother.
So, and, you know, he's got a crush on a girl in this class, and it all is kind of clashing as this guy
right.
kind of comes into their home.
I think, but you know what? The guy comes into the home, you know, as a mother, I want to say, I raised a son, and I think that there is a fine line between wanting to be the man in your mother's life and wanting to not be the man in your mother's life. Wanting your mother to have that husband, for you to have a father that's around the house that can play, you know, ball with you, that can teach you how to tinker, you know, under the sink, you know, who can, you know. So it's a little bit edible.
Yeah.
At the same time as wanting to see your mother happy, and believing that a relationship will bring that happiness. And I think that's the thought process of a child, you know, to be fair.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just all weird. It's just all that for me, it just came off as a very, like a lifetime movie in a way.
A little bit, yeah.
But also kind of like one of those trashy novels that you see. Although, like, there's not a lot of, like, sex in it.
Right.
But it's all there.
Yeah.
And it's, like, all
the tension, the sexual tension is definitely there.
All in, like, the hidden messages. And, you know,
with the rope and the peaches.
The bondage scene, the pie scene, which...
Who don't know what a Georgia
pie scene was? Food porn, as far as I'm concerned. That was... Because they're getting all in there and their hands are touching, and the whole time this kid's watching.
He's watching his mother be tied up, which is like, okay. And it's not, it's the look, it's in the gaze, what the looks that are happening across the room between the son and the mother and the convict, you know,
the laying in bed listening to mom and convict
going at it
on.
Yeah.
It was like, what the hell is going on in this movie?
Yeah, it was a little uncomfortable. I described it as creepy.
It's creepy.
That's my
best
word.
I'm not sure if it's funny in an intentional way.
The audience laughed in some places where there were meant to be laughs. I almost walked out though. If I were not a critic, and I never walk out on movies.
Right.
If I were not a critic, with the slap of the kid.
Oh yeah.
I was like, what
kid?
Is happening in this movie? So if you want to see this film, go for it. But be warned.
Yes, be very warned. It's a bizarre movie. And, you know, Jason Reitman's such a great filmmaker. He's done Up in the Air.
Juno.
Excellent movies. His movies always have great characters in very real situations that you can really identify with.
And I think he tried to do a more romantic, like an edgy romance. And with this adaptation, I think those elements, his edgy romance being an adaptation of an existing novel, using something else as source material. I think that was a part of what made it so difficult.
Right. And, you know, and the thing for me is it's not necessarily a bad movie. It's a bizarre movie. It's entertaining while you're watching it. It's just so, where do these people come from? But it certainly has an audience. I mean, I do think it's a movie that women will enjoy to watch.
I don't know why you think that.
The women I talked to after the screening,
are you serious?
Really seemed to enjoy it. But I think I think a lot of them caught on to like all the weird.
Right.
But
here's the thing. As a woman, I felt like this was a woman and a child who were existing in such extreme desperation that any old thing would do. And I think we were supposed to be made to believe that he was a good guy and he was a convict by accident. He's not really a criminal. I don't know. The women that I spoke to after the screening, and it was only a couple, felt the same way, that it was that the dynamics were a little creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird, but I do think it has an audience. But maybe not in that. I don't think it's a movie that women are going to watch. And
it's not Twilight.
It's not going to be let's bond over this movie.
Right.
This movie really touched. No, it's a good movie to watch and laugh at.
Well, you know, and speaking of Twilight, that was another thing that I felt that the Josh Brolin character was that dangerous gentleman.
You know.
Like Edward Cullen, you know, he's the dangerous vampire that could totally kill you at any moment. but you fall in love with him anyways.
But here he's cooking and cleaning and doing household chores and teaching the little boy how to throw a baseball and doing all the things his dad can't do because, you know, his dad's played by Clark Gregg, and he's off with the Avengers anyway.
That's so right. He's saving the world. So,
all right. Anyways, Labor Day, you know, and the thing for me is I hate telling people to see a movie or not to see a movie.
Right.
What I like to do is just tell them my opinion.
That's me
too. I don't like
to,
because you're going to like a movie for the reasons I might not like a movie, and it's going to go vice versa, and that's same with anybody.
Right.
You know? What do you think, Tim? Is this movie? I don't know. Go see it.
Make
up your own opinion. This is what I thought.
I encourage people to see movies. I mean,
absolutely.
Because
see
seeing
bad movies. Because bad movies make good movies better.
Exactly. I mean, but seeing movies isn't just, I like it. It's about having an experience. Mm-hmm. Movies and television, but movies shape our lives.
Yeah.
They are a part of the experiences, a part of our families, as much as picnics or as much, you know what I mean? So I encourage people to see films. Is there anything coming out that you're looking forward to?
Well, next week we're gonna talk about the Lego Movie.
The Lego Movie. Oh,
and without being able to say anything about it, I'm looking forward to talking about it.
That's right.
Yeah, because we're in Kansas City, so we've got embargoes on our reviews, and
we can't talk
about them until the day.
Well, I can say I have not yet seen the Lego Movie, and I'm looking forward to it. My kids are looking forward to it. And it looks like it's a freaking amazing. When I saw the preview, I was like, I've got to see this. And I think most people feel that way.
If you played Legos when you were a kid, then you definitely need to see this movie.
Right on.
That's about all I'll say.
How about The Monuments Men? Are you looking forward to that?
Well, I like George Clooney's movies, so I'm looking forward to watching it. Yeah. I mean, if only because of the cast, George Clooney, Bill Murray, Matt Damon.
Mm.
It's got some great, you know,
great
actors.
Talent.
John Goodman, Kate Blanchett.
It's one of my favorites.
You know, great actors. Not hearing great stuff so far, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So we'll talk about that stuff next week.
Okay.
So let's get caught up in a few things that have been going on, kind of, you know, even since the last time you and I saw each other. You were at Sundance.
I did. I went to the Sundance Film Festival.
That's awesome.
I was there for 2 weeks, and I had a great time. Here's the thing. Usually, I go to the festival every year. It's about my seventh or eighth year, and it is so cold. Going to Park City, Utah is the first time I ever saw 8-foot snow mounds, you know, coming from here. We get moderate winters. But this year, while everybody back east is getting snowfall, and even here in Kansas City, it's crazy cold, it was so warm. Barely needed gloves, didn't have to have 18 layers on, just 3, you know.
<That's all right. laughs>
So it was good weather-wise. And I saw some films that I'm excited about. I saw Fox Searchlight picked up I, Origins, and I got to see that. I saw Dear White People. I saw Whiplash. Like I said, Miles Teller is in that. Rudderless, William H. Macy's directorial debut. I did get to see that, and it also has some Kansas City ties. Casey Twinner is one of the screenwriters on that film, Rudderless, and he lived here in Kansas City for a while. And so my favorite part of the festival is always the people, though, the patrons, the volunteers, and the celebrities. So if you'll bear with me, I'll tell you every single year I go.
No, I want to hear about it. Go for it.
Okay. So every single year I go, I meet a celebrity that I don't recognize. And there's kind of this conversation that you have. Oh, hey, how's it going? Oh, you're here for the festival? Because there are locals who are not there for the festival. They're like, I live here. You know, and so the conversation kind of goes and say, oh, are you in the business or do you have a film in the festival? And so this guy comes up to me and he's asking me about a bus that he needs to take to get back to his lodge. And he has this incredible voice. And I say, oh, my goodness, are you in the business? And he said, yes. And I said, are you a voice actor? He said, well, I'm an actor, but I do some voice work. And I say, you should. You have an incredible voice. Oh, my goodness. And so we're talking a little bit, and he just kind of stops, and he says, well, I'm on a show called Parks and Recreations. I go, oh, my God, I am so sorry. Forgive me, so sorry. I have never seen that show. And this happens to me every year. I met Jane Lynch kind of in the same way one year. I recognized her, but not really. It was before Glee, but I had seen her in Speaking of Princesses, one of the Cinderella remakes with Selena Gomez.
Oh.
And she played the... Yeah, she played the stepmother. And so I recognized her, and I'm talking to her, and I said, "No, you're an actress, right?" And she just kind of looked at me like, for real? You know?
Who was this you met? Who, from Parks and Rec?
Oh, Jim O'Hare. He, his character's Jerry.
Oh,
and
yes. Jerry.
And he's married to Christy Brinkley on the show. So yeah. Everybody makes fun of his character. So I told him, I said,
He's a great character on that show. Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. I told him, I said, I'm going to Google you and I'm going to watch Parks and Recreations. I assume it's on Netflix. I do subscribe. So,
absolutely.
And so I'm going to.
Yeah, watch it. That's a great show. That's really
okay.
Good. If you like the Office style of a sitcom with the you know, documentary kind of style, they kind of do that, you know, where they show a scene and somebody's sitting there talking to the camera, you know, and react to something. It's got a great cast. From Adam Scott is on it. Who's the one that just hosted the Golden Globes? Saturday Night Live. Amy Poehler.
Amy
the
Poehler.
The star of the show. What's
That's
her name
right.
again? Amy Poehler. That's it. So, yeah, it's a wonderful show. So,
okay,
so,
I will partake.
Yeah, gotta see that.
I need to watch more television because what I do is, because of Netflix and Hulu, I've been binge watching my shows. And so I won't stay up to speed. I'll just watch back-to-back-to-back episodes. Only thing I'm pretty much up to speed on is Supernatural right now.
Yeah, I kind of do the same thing. My DVR is full of stuff that I haven't watched yet, but I'm working on catching up on Doctor Who right now. So, because I was very late into the Doctor Who game, and you know, for me it was people coming up going, "Hey Tim, what'd you think of the Doctor Who 50th special?" I'm like, "Oh, I didn't watch it," and they're like, "No, seriously, what'd you think of it?"
Uh-oh.
I'm like, "No, I've never watched an
right.
episode of that show before," and they're like, "You might have to turn in your geek card or something
right?
here, bro."
Because
so I'm trying to get to up, and I do
Doctor
love the
Who,
show. So.
But I do like Cumberbatch, so I'm going to... He's on that show, right?
No, he's... that's Sherlock.
He's on Sherlock.
Yeah, this is David Tennant was the doctor for a while. Matt Smith was the doctor. They got a new guy.
And it's based on the movie?
It's been a TV show since 63.
What?
Yeah,
see, I'm
like,
all
yeah,
out of whack.
It's crazy. It's been on forever. It's, you know, a time-traveling alien and his...
What?
Yeah, it's a crazy show. Do you watch, Josh?
Speaking of our sound
guy, I'm going to introduce him right now. We should have done it earlier. Is Josh Wise, student from UMKC. He's our sound guy, so he's going to be here with us, helping us out. And a lot of thanks, obviously, to Josh for being here and helping out. And
thank you so much. He's got a cute ponytail, ladies.
To kind of help us out. So, all right. So, anything else about? We were on Sundance.
Oh, no.
And we ended up on Doctor Who somehow.
Yeah, right? That's so. Us, Tim.
Yeah, no,
we start out on this and then end up in Nebraska. So anything local?
Sundance.
Well, we have to get you there.
Local. You and I had talked about the Withered World series.
That's right.
Which is from a lot of local filmmakers. I've got a few names here. John Davis, Justin Gardner, Tucker Keatley. Katie Mooney, Amber Rapp, Patrick Ray.
Anthony Laddish.
Yeah.
Turner Bayetto.
Lots of great, you know, and there's so many great filmmakers in this town, which is what I love about Kansas City. And it's kind of what I want to do with this show and the things we do is really try to get Kansas City on a map of what a great film community we have.
And
here,
the talent is here. Agreed.
Yeah.
And the thing about Withered World that's so attractive is that in the beginning is that it was such a collaborative effort, and what it's done is kind of help unify our local film community. So many people have hands in on this project. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because they're gearing up for season two, but I wanted to also congratulate Bryce Young, who is the creator of Withered World. He was just awarded the Robert Altman Emerging Filmmaker Fund Education Grant from Artists Inc. He's one of the recipients this year, so I wanted to go ahead and congratulate him on that.
That's really impressive, yeah. So,
he's doing big things.
You can check that out, and the website for that is witheredworld.tv. Yeah. And you can check out all the little shorts, and you said they're kind of compiling that into like a feature film. Is that right?
They've compiled into a feature film. There was a screening last year in 2013. And what they're going to do is just use that and shop it around to film festivals and help, you know, help for funding with season two. They're implementing an internship with Kansas City Public School District. And so they're doing some really great things for season two. And so season one is kind of the calling card right now.
Great. Is that getting any TV play? Or is it just all online?
It's all online right now, but it's getting a lot of reviews. It's gotten some national reviews from, it's an end of the world web series. And so it's been getting some attention. I'm very, very excited for what this project can do for us.
I think with all these filmmakers we have here, I think it's time that Kansas City maybe got into the market of maybe producing some shows with all these local channels that, you know, a lot of local film, like a lot of people in the film community here work at some of these stations. And I'm thinking obviously specifically someone like Michelle Davidson with KSHB, who's awesome. You know, she hosts the KC Live.
Beautiful,
but,
talented,
you know,
smart.
I'd love to see some of these channels, you know, using some of these airtimes when they're not really showing much and airing, you know, and I know Cinema KC does that.
Cinema KC really focuses on independent filmmakers who are making an impact, a real impact, mm-hmm. and I love that show. It's on KCPT right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
you know. They have a project going on right now for Black History Month. You have any information about that, Tim?
I do. Cinema KC is doing Black History Month, and they're showing a new film kind of every weekend, every Saturday at the Crown Center Screenland. This past weekend, they showed an animated movie called Chocolate Me from filmmaker Shane Evans.
Wow. And
next week, Gary Jenkins is showing his documentary Freedom Seekers, Story from the Underground Railroad.
Okay.
So some cool stuff.
Some cool stuff that's also coming up. Kansas City Women in Film and Television, we like to do a lot. Michelle Davidson is involved in that. Have a lot of wonderful women who are on the board, a lot of great members who are both male and female. We host a screenwriting contest every year that runs with Kansas City Film Festival. Next up on the docket for KC WIFT and the IFC Independent Filmmakers Coalition, Thursday, February 13th, they're partnering to bring Kevin Wilmot to Kansas City.
Very
you know
cool.
Kevin Wilmot?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's got a new film, Jayhawkers. And so they're bringing him out 6 p.m. on Thursday to, show clips and trailers of Destination Planet Negro and that film Jayhawkers, which premieres in Lawrence February 14th, 15th, and 16th. And that's going to be at the Lead Center. That's one where a lot of actors, local actors, were utilized. And Kevin Wilmot, he's pretty major.
And yeah, this movie, you know, for Jayhawk fans out there, you know,
right.
It's something that I think every Jayhawk fan is going to see because it you know, features Fog Allen as a character, Wilt Chamberlain, Dick Harp.
Right.
So, you know, it's a, you know.
Yeah,
local stuff, baby. You got to watch
it. I'm excited about everything that's happening. I mean, a friend of mine, she's a fantastic actor, Laura Kirk. She had a film out at Slam Dance this year, so I ran into her. And, you know, she knows Kevin Wilmot. I mean, everybody knows this guy. Everybody is rooting for Jayhawkers. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to encourage people to come out and see it. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it should be a good time. Now, I know one thing that we need to talk about that maybe isn't the most fun thing to talk about, though, is the tragic news over the weekend
right.
of the passing of actor Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was found yesterday, or, you know, on Sunday, I'll say, dead from a drug overdose, heroin overdose.
Right.
So, yeah.
And that's sad, and we want to express our condolences to his family.
Absolutely.
He was a father.
Yeah, he was a father of three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's an Oscar winner. He's got a lot going on. I mean, you said you saw a couple of things he was involved in
at Sundance. He had two films out there this year.
And I know he was getting ready to direct a movie. I can't remember the specifics of that off the top of my head. But
I don't know.
They had just made some announcement last week he was going to be directing. But he died of a drug overdose, which I think is the tragic thing about it, because, you know, this isn't someone who was killed in a car accident, didn't die of a disease, didn't right. die of a, you know,
old age,
anything that was out of his control. Is, you know, in fact, was something that was very well, you know, and maybe you talk about drug addiction and you don't have control, but this was something he did do, you know, himself. I mean,
right.
you know, I think
what happens is, you know, a lot of times we as civilians, people who are not in the entertainment industry, we reserve our, I don't want to say reserve our compassion. I'll say our sorrow, because it's something that they did to themselves. I mean, I've heard a lot of people over the past, when we've seen this in the past, who kind of don't feel like entertainers. I mean, let me make sure I'm being clear. It seems like we feel that entertainers have everything that they could possibly
yeah.
want.
Why would anybody do this themselves?
Why would anybody do this to themselves?
And I think that we all kind of think that, you know, we all live modest lives and, you know, we all think, man, if I just had like $1 million, dude, I'd be set. I'd be so happy. I wouldn't have any problems in the world. But the thing is that money doesn't buy anything except for stuff.
It buys you stuff.
And that's all it gets you. It doesn't buy happiness. And, you know, and I think that's the misconception is, you know, these, you know, especially celebrities, they get, you know, athletes, they get this money. And it doesn't buy them the happiness. So they're still left with whatever they have inside of them that...
Exactly. No matter where you go, there you are. And you made a great point earlier. You were kind of breaking your perspective down for me. You were talking about theater kids mm-hmm. and how sometimes they are outcast in school. They're a little bit tormented by that. And then they grow up and become famous people, but that kid is still there,
yeah.
you know? And then I thought that was a good point because, you know,
lot of these people are actors because they're insecure, you know, with yeah. who they are. They have to go out and they have to pretend to be something else. And you know what? They get lucky and someone pays them millions of dollars. But one other thing is they don't all get paid that much.
Right.
You know, one thing is people think because somebody makes a movie, well, look at them. They're all rich and famous. No, well, not necessarily.
Well, I will say that everybody has insecurities. I don't know if I
Absolutely.
Can fully agree with you, Timothy English, that they are actors because they're insecure. I think that
I said most of them. You know,
okay.
A lot of them, maybe. We'll go with a lot of them because I won't even like generalize.
Acting is a craft. Acting is a business and yeah. a craft. And people will take a lot of time. They spend a lot of money to get training. And I mean, some of them get lucky. Sometimes they're good looking, Keanu Reeves. And, you know, they get lucky. But a lot of times people are very serious about their craft. I mean, they become well-educated to make sure that they're doing their jobs at their level best. But the insecurities that we all share, you know, don't necessarily go away because you're famous,
yeah.
because somebody wants your autograph, because you drive a particular kind of car or can eat at a restricted establishment. You know, exclusivity doesn't, you know, guarantee that whatever ghosts are haunting you, you know, that they're...
Yeah, and that's right.
Exercised.
And I think, you know, a lot of people are going to look at this. You know, you look at people like Philip Seymour Hoffman, who you can say, hey, man, that guy had everything. He's an Oscar winner. He's a multiple Oscar nominee. He's been in amazing movies. I mean, you know, just little popcorn films from like Hunger Games to movies like The Master. He won for Capote. You know, I mean, he's been, you know, he played a bad guy in Mission Impossible 3. He's kind of done everything, and he's always really good at it.
And
Boogie Nights. What's the one with the kid?
With the kid?
No, come on. My wife would kill me for not remembering this movie. The music one, Cameron Crowe, the kid that goes on the road with the band.
Do you know Mr. Weiss?
Josh, you got me.
Well, I'm going to say Patch Adams is one of my favorite movies. He was, you know, supporting role, but I loved him in it, so...
Yeah, Almost Famous is that movie.
Almost Famous.
You know, just little movies where you just, he always has such a memorable, he's not a main character in that,
no.
but he's got a great supporting role and he's always so good. So people see a guy like that and they're like, what did he have to be? Why is he doing drugs?
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing people always ask is, well, why is someone like that doing drugs? Right. Why does anybody do drugs?
So I guess the big debate for me is when we see somebody like Philip Seymour Hoffman with such a resume, such a repertoire, his body of work is amazing. In remembering this person, are we able to just celebrate that body of work? Or do we have to, as an audience, also focus on the drug use? Are we able to just say, well, you know, he's a person, he had faults and foibles, like all of us, and let's just focus on his work? Or are we obligated to discuss? I mean,
I think any obligation to discuss it is just going to come because I think it's something that we're all dealing with. You know, I mean, we all know people who have had alcohol problems, drug problems,
right?
You know, whether any of us have done drugs ourselves, whatever, you know, it's kind of something.
But these kind of people, do we want to celebrate them?
I don't know if it's a matter of celebrating them, though.
But
you remember them,
right? You can remember them, remember the work, enjoy the work. But as public figures,
does this hurt his image? Is that what you're asking? Does it hurt his image? Is that what you're asking?
I mean, yeah, it hurt his image. But as public figures, I think that an automatic role model, you become an automatic role model.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know,
is that too much pressure?
Well, I think it's even foolish just to classify any of these people as role models anymore.
You know, they're just entertainers.
They're people. I wouldn't even say they're just entertainers. They're people. I mean, you look at athletes, actors, anybody who's on TV, who kids are going to look up to.
Right.
They're people, and you have to make sure that you're teaching kids at a young age to be careful who they are idolizing. And we, as right. you know, even if just, you know, huge movie fans, you know, we have to watch who we're idolizing, because they're not people that grew up on a pedestal who are, you know, holier than thou and have everything more just because they have some money and some fame. They're people
but
with
they
the same
just
problems.
They don't have money and fame. They make history. They go down in the history books. We know their names. We speak their names. We pass their names on. Their work survives them. And I think, you know, when my child wants to be an actor and they want to be involved with these people, you know, you want to say, yes, get to know Philip Seymour Hoffman because he's won an Oscar and he's amazing and he knows how to make it happen.
Yeah.
But then you think...
And then I guess you turn that into, but
yeah,
be careful where the slide takes
you. So the responsibility
lies on
the parent.
Because it does not always have a happy ending.
Right. It doesn't always
have a happy
ending.
And it's unfortunate. And I loved him. I mean, he still needed to finish filming Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2. So it'll be, I'm curious to see how they finish that. Because I know they said he was almost done with the first one. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, maybe he had some voice work. I don't know, maybe for the first movie. Because they're splitting this last book into two parts.
Of
they're
course.
Doing that little hogwash. And so they said he had 7 days left
of shooting
on Part 2. So, but that could mean a lot, how much of that was actually his stuff and how much does he just need to be in the background, around the scene, and
right.
how much is essential. They've already said nothing should get delayed, so.
Nothing should be delayed on the Hunger Games.
It's unfortunate, and but, you know,
well,
I think, like we just said, it's important to remember these people, what they did, but, you know, unfortunately someone like this becomes a tragic, you know.
Recognize that they were human.
Yeah. Look.
Okay.
Look where this.
That's
came
our.
To,
that's for me. It's a big debate. I think that our listeners should join us on Facebook and get involved in the conversation. Sound off. Tell us what you think. You know.
We want to hear your opinion. So
absolutely.
And at the end of the show here, we'll give you a couple emails and Twitter, and so you can talk to us. You know, because I think definitely one thing as we go forward here, we want to get some feedback from our listeners.
That's right.
If you have questions, I think that's another thing we can do. We can get questions from people who are listening to our podcast. Shoot us a question. We'll call you out. We'll argue. You know, maybe someday we can
that's
get into
right.
taking calls and get people in here.
I love it.
So, all right, let's get away from the depressing stuff.
That's right. Let's move into, I want to get back to princesses, but before we do, you had, an event you want to talk about?
This Saturday at the Alamo Draft House, February 8th, we are hosting a screener for, a screening of the documentary, The Act of Killing.
What is The Act of Killing?
This is a movie that was made about, is from director Josh Oppenheimer,
mm-hmm.
and it's about a death squad, you know, with
a death squad.
Right. You know, they would.
And this is a documentary, so this is a death squad in Kansas City?
No. I'm trying to get the country up here. I apologize.
Oh, this. No.
But so what would have happened? They'd take these guys who were Indonesia. Okay, let me get. They're in Indonesia, and like years ago, these guys were, you know, like when governments were kind of controlling their citizens, these guys would just take the people that kind of weren't going along, and you know, they'd come up with all these clever and less messy ways of, you know, killing people. And so what this filmmaker does is he takes these guys that were responsible for all these deaths, mm-hmm. and has them recreate the way they killed people, but they do it in a kind of a Hollywood. They have them redo their killings as if it was like a Hollywood. And these guys, you learn that for a while they were doing this, because they were, you know, obviously obsessed with American culture.
Okay.
They thought they were movie stars. And it's incredible to watch this film, because even as these documentary, you know, they're making this documentary about them, it's like they're doing it. Oh, and it's almost like they're proud of this. But you can see as they recreate, you can see the humanity setting in on these guys, the realization of all the people they killed,
what they've done.
And it's, you know, it's just incredibly powerful. I mean, it's winning all kinds of awards.
Nice.
The Kansas City Film Critics this past December, we just named it our best documentary film.
Excellent.
And so this Saturday, you can come out to Alamo Draft House, and we're going to show the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And myself and Trey Hawk and Loey Lockerbie, the president of the Kansas City Film Critics Circle, we're going to be on hand to introduce the film and for a Q&A afterward.
Nice.
So I highly suggest people come out, because it's going to be a lot of fun.
I definitely think you can.
And I believe tickets are like $9.
That's
you
it?
You can get them at Alamo Draft House. So.
Alamo Draft House.
Come on
House.
Out this Saturday night. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So, ding, ding, ding. We get to go into Princess, my top five, your top five.
Yeah, let's talk about Princess movies. And, you know, our inspiration for doing this was obviously the release of Frozen.
That's
which
right.
Which is kind of the, you know, itself is winning all the, you know, animated kind of movie awards. And, but also,
they're doing a re-release, right, with a sing-along?
I believe so. Yeah, and I know the song is winning awards, the movie itself. So Disney's got another Disney princess hit on their hands. So it's inspired you and I to come up with our favorite princess movies. And
and here's the thing. The princess is one of my favorite character archetypes. And I know that the princess gets a bad rap because of the quote unquote unrealistic standards of girl and womanhood. That's
kind of what I like about kind of the newer ones that are coming out, especially Frozen, because it had a nice message where, you know, that act of true love doesn't have to be from the strapping man that's trying to save you. You know, it was about the love between sisters. I thought that, you know, having a daughter, it's a great message.
And I mean, but you know, that non-traditional message, I think, I won't say it started, but it really became popularized all the way back with Mulan. You know, she was your non-traditional princess. She was your warrior, you know, but the princess, I think that she kind of serves the same purpose as a He-Man or Superman or Iron Man. I mean, she's kind of something to aspire to. I mean, He-Man is unrealistic, you know, as a princess, but still we peddle that to young boys, or we did back in the 80s. Sorry.
Right.
I don't know what they're doing now.
So we each have a top five.
We do have a top five.
Work our way down from top, you know, from number five on. We've discussed our list already together, so I know a couple of them cross over, so we'll just kind of.
Yeah.
And I'll let you shoot first with your number five on your list.
Well, my number five is Shrek.
Excellent, because so is mine.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah, Shrek is pretty amazing. When I saw it, it was, you know, the animation was awesome. It is a little cheeky, a little irreverent. I love the music and the idea of the princess not becoming beautiful. you know, starting out pretty, starting out in the dress, starting out that way. And then when she becomes herself and she's fully in bloom, she's the ogre. I thought it was, you know, beautiful twist.
Yeah. It's not about what's on the outside, right? It's about what's on the inside. And I loved it too, because just of the humor, I thought was just so clever, and the way they kind of tie in all the fairy tales, and, you know, just the balloon animals out of the snakes. I mean, just
right?
The little things like that, just
the details were,
yeah. And, you know, and it's one of those where, you know, obviously when a movie's that successful, they're going to make a bunch more, and they did. And I thought as they went on,
it's kind of the same thing over and over.
Right.
Well, I mean,
but
you know, they created.
Still, you can go back and watch that first movie, and it's still just as funny.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah. They
I like
created
it.
A world, and they did an amazing job. Okay. So, number four, what's your number four?
My number four is The Never Ending Story.
What?
Yeah. It was one of my favorites from when I was little. I remember seeing it with my dad, and, you know, the princess in that. You know, it's all about naming the princess,
yes,
and this little boy, and, you know, but I mean, he has like the dragon Falcor and,
right,
you know, the rock monsters. It was just such
one of the best.
I loved it.
And, imagine,
and of course, you know, as a writer myself, it did something for me when I was little, because it was all about going into that story and living it. You know, when
living
I grew up
the imagination.
Child of divorced parents. So my imagination was like my best friend growing up. So that's kind of what I did, was when I'd go out, I'd play, and I became Indiana Jones.
That's right.
I became Han Solo, you know.
And it really sends the message that they're not just imagination, but there's power in a book.
Reading.
In reading, you know.
And I think especially now, kids, I make my kids read. Go take a book. It's made out of paper. It smells great.
Right.
Read it. It's awesome. You know, you don't need the little, you know, that's cool. To have
I've been lucky.
Tablets.
My girls are avid readers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. So
I can't keep enough books in the house.
I think that's another reason I liked it, though, is because it does, you know.
Champion.
Read a book.
Literacy.
There's amazing stories.
Absolutely.
That you can live out in, you know, in a book.
Well, my number four is kind of along the same lines of Shrek. Ella Enchanted is another Cinderella re-envisioning. It had starred Anne Hathaway, one of her earlier films. And it was kind of, like I used the word cheeky, it kind of played on pop culture. And there's singing, but it was not annoying, you know, just really cool characters. Kind of had a drunk fairy godmother, you know, like weird stuff that, you know, just made it pop. I think it gave it a sense of character. The movie itself had such personality. And I have you seen that one? Or
I have not.
Have
seen
not
it.
Seen it. It's I think it's a really great turn on the Cinderella tale. Yeah. And I loved Anne Hathaway in it. Those early movies for her, I became a fan. And
Anne Hathaway's a good actress.
Yeah, I've been with her ever since. So.
Yeah. So, all right. And that looks like a pretty early movie in her career. So, all right. Number three?
My number three is Disney's Beauty and the Beast. for some reason, at some point, I knew all of the words to Beauty and the Beast, not just the song lyrics, but the actual words. I could sit down, and I was a teenager. I think I was a senior in high school when this came out. So, I mean, and for it just really captured me, the idea of seeing beyond this exterior, and love breaking the curse of loneliness and all of these things. Those were themes that really spoke to me at that, or that's the way I interpreted it at that time. And it's a movie that has proved to be timeless. I mean, my children, my son and my daughters both enjoy that movie. So anything where I can sit down with my kids and watch it and we all are entertained, regardless of age, regardless of interest, you know, but yeah.
I've seen that one, but
yes.
My number three is also a Disney princess movie. It's my Disney princess movie from my list. I picked one, and it's Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
That's Princess Aurora, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Aurora, Maleficent. They're doing the Maleficent movie with a...
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So it looks very cool. But for this one, I think it's the end of the movie that always got me, where she raises the field of thorns and turns into that dragon. And for me, it was so dark. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're little, I mean, it kind of scared the hell out of me. It was like, whoa, you know? And Disney really does it with some of these movies now. They don't get that dark anymore.
Right. They used to go there. They really did. I mean, Disney used to allow you to be maybe not horrified, but scared.
Yeah.
I was afraid of those dancing brooms in Fantasia. I'm just saying.
So, yeah, that was my number three. It's one of those that I watch with, you know, my daughter at least once a year. And
nice.
You know, so she, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, princesses bring you together with your family, I think. But for me, they have. So.
All right. What's your number two?
My number two, whoop, whoop, The Princess Bride.
Excellent. Because also so is mine.
Yeah,
I mean, it's my number two.
I think.
One of my all-time favorites.
Yeah. All-time favorite movies, going down in history as one of.
So many great lines to quote.
So many great lines.
Characters. I mean, just. You know,
I'm telling you, it's another, and I had such a huge crush on Chris Sarandon. I'm
Chris
not
Sarandon.
Gonna lie.
That probably came from also Fright Night.
Fright Night,
yeah,
yes.
Well, I figured that. So, yeah, because he was the Jerry the Vampire in the original.
Fright Night.
The only one you should see if you.
The
see
only
Fright
one
Night.
You should see. I stand.
But yeah,
with
Princess
you on
Bride,
that.
An amazing movie. I mean, the guy with the six fingers, the sword fighting.
I mean,
the switch over to left hand. I mean, just there's just so many just great characters.
Great,
I love that movie.
It's mind blowing for me. It is mind blowing how awesome that movie is. I watch it
and still,
yeah,
and it holds up. You know, we're a lot of movies. Up. You know, they don't always hold up. You know,
little
over time,
Fred Savage.
Yeah. And again, you're getting into the power of a book.
That's right.
Because, you know, that kid, I don't want to hear this stupid story, Grandpa.
And then by the
it's
end,
about
he's
kissing.
Like,
I don't want to hear kissing,
I
you know?
Know.
And then at the end, he's like, no, you can read that part. So.
And then by the end, he's like, hey, can you come over like every day, twice a day and read this to
yeah,
me?
Yeah, right.
You know?
So, yeah, another one that has to do with books. So I think that's good that we both kind of saw something that kind of goes back to, you know, the origin of stories, you know, in books.
The
and
origins
writing.
Of stories. I love it.
Yeah.
And so number one, drum roll, please.
My number one is the Star Wars movies.
The Star Wars.
Princess
all of them?
Leia. Well, you know, I think if you go with the original trilogy and just Princess Leia, who was, you know, as a kid, my first, like, crush was Carrie Fisher in Princess Leia. And it was, you know, and it was even before, like, the slave bikini Princess Leia in Return of the Jedi. Because she's just such a badass, you know. She's out there with her buns and a gun and blowing stormtroopers away. And
her buns and her guns.
Her buns and her guns. That's right, baby. And, you know, I mean, her interaction with Han Solo and, you know, it wasn't a forced love story, you know, like, oh, well, they've got to fall in love because he's the pirate guy and she's the princess.
It
felt very real. And then, you know, has so many great lines, you know, none better than when he tells her that he loves her at the end of Empire Strikes, or she tells him he loves her and he just says, I know. Just so cool. It's like the coolest line
How
ever.
Sexy
so,
is that?
Yeah,
I already knew that girl.
So yeah, that for me, that's my number one. So
fantastic. Well, my number one, I thought it was a little bit unconventional, but I might not be as clever as I think I am. But my number one all time favorite princess movie is Coming to America.
Yeah, another classic and another one that can just be quoted all day long.
All day long.
That's easily one of Eddie Murphy's best movies.
I will agree with you. I'm telling you, sometimes I just break out into, just let yourself flow, baby. Yeah. And like, no matter how old people are around me, they know what I'm talking about. You know?
Oh, yeah. Every now and then I'll have I'll be on Facebook and I'll just post a quote, just a random, you know, and it's usually like the good morning, my neighbors. And so, you know, somebody usually follows up with, hey, F you.
That's
like,
right.
Yes. You know, and then bam, all day long, it's just people are just another quote, and it just goes on and on. I think we got the whole movie covered.
But the thing about it is, this is about this guy looking for love, but it's really a princess story.
It is. I mean, he's looking for his princess. I mean, and I think, you know, even, you know, as guys, we're all looking for our princess. And
yes.
Every princess is looking for her knight in shining armor.
Exactly.
So, and that's very much what this movie is. It's a fish out of water story.
It is the Cinderella story from the princess perspective.
Yeah.
You know.
It's got Samuel Jackson in it.
That's right.
Come on,
dude. With a shotgun.
And I guarantee before most people realize that was everybody's first introduction to Samuel Jackson was standing there with his big eyes trying to rub.
What you looking at, buddy?
You know. Hilarious. There's our top five
picks.
Princess movies. Go see Frozen. Take your kids. It's an entertaining little movie.
Agreed.
So
I think it's time for us to say goodbye for today.
That's probably a good idea.
I think let's
remind people to watch Casey Live every day.
Please do that.
They've done a lot for us, so you should watch. Michelle and Michael are both great.
Amazing,
really, really nice people. Yeah,
Emmy award-winning hosts.
Yeah, so watch the show. It's on Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. on KSHB TV 41 here in Kansas City. We mentioned that Cinema KC has their Black History Month series going. February 8th, you can catch Freedom Seekers at the Screenland Crown Center.
That's
and
right.
I believe they're asking for a $10 donation that goes to Cinema KC. Comic-Con's coming up
in
March, and I'm working on getting us into that, and maybe we could... Josh, you want to go to Comic-Con?
You want to go to Comic-Con with us?
Sure.
All right.
Fantastic.
So we're gonna try to do that, and maybe we can get some, you know, because they got a bunch of Star Trek people that are going to be there. William Shatner. I mean, dude, if we can get William Shatner on the show.
Oh, wow. Well, I think George Takei, he's getting really popular. He had a documentary that...
He was there last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Sundance this year that everybody loved. And so, yeah, he's pretty popular.
Yeah, really great. So,
and don't forget about KC Wift and IFC Thursday, February 13th. Bringing Kevin Wilmot to Kansas City for Destination Planet Negro and Jayhawkers trailers. And then the actual premiere of Jayhawkers, February 14th. It will run through the 16th at the Lead Center in Lawrence.
And since we're working out of the Alamo Draft House today, we should mention they've got a lot coming up. They've got a Scott Pilgrim versus the World quote along. Did you ever see that?
I have seen Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
I love that movie. What are the
Very good.
Have you seen? Yeah, dude, I didn't see that in theaters, but I saw it on, you know, afterwards on DVD or whatever, and I was like, man, this would be a great 3D movie because there's so many awesome visuals.
True.
But the movie was not released in 3D.
Well, they'll bring it back, I'm sure. Yeah. They'll reimagine it.
Yeah, and then they'll give it a crappy 3D transfer. But you can get on Alamo's website, drafthouse.com/Kansas_city. Just Google Alamo KC and you'll find it. But you should go there, get up to Alamo Drafthouse, check out all the amazing things they have going on. It's a great place.
And final thing, join us on Facebook. I'm Lonita Cook, and you are my friend, partner, fellow film critic, Timothy English, but we don't have a name for our show yet.
Yeah, we don't. We're just kind of going with the Tim and Lo show.
Right.
Tim and Lonita. We need a name. So,
we need a name.
Why don't you...
help us out.
Yeah, help us out with that. And when we get that name, we'll get like a Facebook page set up.
That's right.
A Twitter account. Myself, you can follow me at TB English on Twitter. Facebook.com/bonusfeaturesKC to get my reviews. This would be a good place to send us stuff.
That's right. And I'm also on examiner.com, and I'm on Facebook. We will have a Facebook page for this podcast. What we are asking is that you guys reach out with some title ideas to name our show.
We're not clever enough to come up with it ourselves.
I know.
We really tried.
And then we're running a little contest that's going to last until the end of the month, I guess.
Yeah.
And
we'll get some cool prizes in there. We know lots of great people, and I'm sure somebody will donate something cool for us to
get some cool prizes
give
out there
somebody
for you.
Cool present.
We're movie fans, and we know a lot of movie fans. So movie fans, join us, and we will get you into some screenings. We'll be able to do something for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank
That's
you so
it.
Much
for
our listening.
Pilot episode of the Tim and Lo Show.
That's
Thanks
right.
again to Josh.
It's been a blast.
For being here, and we're going to try to do this every week.
Every week it is.
All right. So until then, peace out. See
you. Peace.